Okay. Hi, Jewish moms. Okay, I have a really exciting guest with me for this week's interview. Famous author, Yael Mermelstein. She's one of my favorite authors. I love her, like, voice. She's so genuine so real and so, So I had the opportunity to interview her, and it ended up being that she actually came in real life to actually sit with me, and this is really wonderful. I'm really excited to really meet in real life in the flesh.
I'm excited to meet you in real life.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, so I'm Hannah Jenny Weisberg of JewishMom.com. For those of you who don't know me, I'm about to interview Yael Mermelstein. Yael Mermelstein is the author of 14 books for children and adults and has published thousands of articles in Jewish markets. She is the associate editor at the children's magazine Bina Bunch. Her book, Izzy the Wiz and Passover McLean, was a TJ Library selection. She is the recipient of a Sydney Taylor Manuscript Award. Yay! Her first book for the general market, Camp Ma Tovu, will be released by Penguin in September 2021. Her most recent release is Sheva's Diary with Hamodia Treasures. And I hope that she's going to be, this is really, I was just looking at it. It's her new book, Sheva's Diary. It's a takeoff, it's a Jewish from version, and for a girl, the Diary of a Wimp. The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and it's really wonderful. I have a daughter. It's about a girl in fifth grade, and I have a daughter in fifth grade, and I'm gonna rush and get it for her. It's fantastic. So I hope that you'll be telling us more about that later. She lives in Israel with her husband and seven children. She lives in Beitar Elit, and she has sheep roaming outside her window.
Yes, I do.
Great. Okay, so. So the first thing that I read about you that really surprised me was that you were born in Brussels.
I was, yes.
So you, your parents are?
So, no, my mother's Israeli, and my father is actually American.
Yeah.
And my mother moved to America when she was about 11, and she spoke French because first they moved to France, so she was in school in Strasbourg, and she learned French there in the Beis Yaakov there. And then my father, he applied to medical school during the Vietnam War when medical school was a draft evasion.
Yeah.
So basically every single person in the world tried to get into medical school then. So he wasn't able to get in the States, so he ended up going, a lot of people went overseas, so he ended up going to medical school in Belgium. After my parents got married, and that's where I was born. So my first language was French, and I barely remember any of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You told this amazing, I read this amazing thing that you said that you listened to yourself speaking French when you were a
kid.
Yeah, and you don't understand what you're saying.
I like these old cassette tapes, and I hear myself talking French, and I'm like, what is she saying? Who is that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So there were a few things in learning more about you that I was struck, because there's like three things that are the same as me.
Okay.
Like my personal story.
All right.
So the first thing is that in all the in the various articles that I read about you, it always comes up that your writing career started with a haiku that you wrote in second grade.
Yes, that is true.
And I have the same story.
Really?
I wrote a haiku.
That's so funny.
In second grade, and I think the time has come to share this with the world. It's never before. Okay, I'm gonna read it to you. Okay.
Go ahead.
Because then my teacher put it up on in the hallway.
Board.
Yeah.
Yeah, my too.
The
Mrs. Levin.
Wow. Oh yeah, so my teacher is Mrs. Moran, and she put it up on the for the school.
Funny.
And the teacher was fourth graders, fifth graders, but I was so honored.
That's
so this was
funny.
The haiku, okay? This is it. The dog ran away in the dark midst of winter to somewhere beyond.
Wow. In the dark midst of winter, you got seven. The dog ran away. The dog ran away. Five. Yeah, well, so the last one.
Oh, wait. So it doesn't work.
575.
The dog ran away.
That's fine.
In the dark midst of winter.
Okay.
To somewhere beyond.
You're perfect.
Exactly. So if for those of you who don't know what a haiku is, it's 5 syllables, 7 syllables, and 5 syllables. So
I only remember one line of mine.
Yeah, so what was your one line?
The 7, which was beautiful clouds scuttle by. The first one was something about the sky being blue.
Yeah.
And then beautiful clouds scuttle by, and now I don't remember the third line, but yeah.
Yeah. How did you possibly know the word scuttle in
second
grade?
It could be that really my memory is tricking myself, and I think it was the word scuttle, but really it was the word something else. So.
Okay. So then, can you tell, I read this beautiful story, how you're on your second date, and you brought your writing to share with your husband-to-be.
I did.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, and you can also read about this on my website, yalmermelstein.com, but I brought it to my second date. I brought my diary with, like, I had writings, and I brought them, and I said to him, we were at the end of the date, and I said, listen, it's really, really important. You need to know that I write. And he's like, okay. And I said, so I'm going to read you some poems. I have a whole book here. Do you have time? He was like, sure. So I sat there and I started reading through all of my prose and my poetry and reading it out to him. And he very patiently listened.
Wow.
And then I never brought it up again. And then a few years later, after we were married and we had a few kids and he was like, wait a second, remember on our second date when you made me sit through that whole, and he said, what happened to your writing? Why aren't you writing? I'm like, listen, I'm busy, I have a house, and he was very, very encouraging. He's like, you have to start writing again. And he ended up calling up my favorite writer, Sarah Shapiro. Are you familiar with her?
Okay, so this is our second similarity, but I'm going to tell
you. Yeah, okay, fine.
Okay.
So he ended up, she was my favorite writer. I used to read her writing and say, I just really emulate this woman. And so he just found her number in the Madrich phone book.
Wow.
And he called her up and put the phone to my ear and said, is Sarah Shapiro tough to her and tell you want to be a writer? And she answered the phone and I was like, hi, my name is Yael Mermelstein, I want to be a writer. And anyone who's ever met Sarah, she's a very, very gracious person. And she was like, oh, that's so nice. And she was so encouraging. And she said, when we get off the phone, you have to write something and submit it. Wow. And I did that. I hung up the phone, and I wrote something, and I submitted it, and it was accepted, which was, I was very, very blessed, because after that, I had many things that were rejected.
Yeah.
But the fact that first one was accepted gave me a lot of energy to keep going. You know, I don't know what would have happened if the first thing would have been rejected.
Right. And so how long was this conversation, like this life-altering conversation with Sarah Shapiro?
It was probably 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did she give you any specific advice?
Well, she told me that she gives a writing workshop, mm-hmm. So I joined it. And that was, like, really my start.
Yeah.
Joining her writing workshop really gave me my start and gave me my wings. And being in an environment with women who were all writers, and they were all, I felt like they were all of my ilk, and it kind of, it really, so that really started me on my path.
Yeah.
But she wasn't trying to promote her own writing workshops. She was just promoting me. She just wanted, she's a very special person.
Yeah. So I had a similar story with Sarah Shapiro.
Second commonality.
But I said at the beginning of the interview that I have three things that are the same with me, like in my story, that exist strangely the same as the Yael story. So when I wrote, I was starting to write my first book. I was in my second pregnancy 24 years ago. No, I'm sorry, my second pregnancy 21 years ago. I had never, I'd never written anything for publication before or anything.
Right.
And I just had this idea of a great book, a book about Orthodox women, our experience of pregnancy, called Expecting Miracles. So I decided, Sarah Shapiro was my favorite writer.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I decided that I was going to...
This was not pre-planned, by the way.
No,
I don't know what she's asking me, so I have no idea what's coming. I'm just telling you. Yeah, go ahead.
So I actually went... Oh, I sent her the first 50 pages of my book, the manuscript. And she actually took her time.
Wow.
And met with me.
Oh, my goodness.
And she gave me the best advice, amazing, amazing writer's advice.
Wow.
The first thing she said was, she said, while you're writing, she said, all of us have a really, really frum Rebbetzin on our shoulder who's censoring us, like saying, don't say that, don't say that.
Yeah.
She said, no censoring. The Rebbetzin get rid of her. Afterwards, you can go back over and censor whatever you think isn't appropriate.
I remember her saying that now in her workshops.
Yeah. And the second thing is, I said, well, what kind of book do you think would be the most popular, like, what kind of book? She said, if you write the book that you think other people want to read, you will write the world's most boring book.
Hmm.
Write the book that you want to write.
Okay.
So thank you,
Sarah Shapiro. I just remembered a third piece of it. I can tell you something I did learn from her. I remember in her workshop, and this is something that until today I carry with me, that she said, when you're writing a story, people have a tendency, like, you end the story, and then you just want to, like, elaborate on it. So you end the story, and then, I took a step forward. That could be, let's say, the pivotal moment. And that step forward is enough. And then you'll keep going and you'll say, I took that step forward and then I just knew that my life was about to change.
Yeah.
And I felt everything coming together and the birds started humming. And she's like, go back like a whole paragraph and end it over there.
Wow.
And I've taken that with me through all my years of writing.
Wow.
Yeah.
We've got to send this to Sarah Shapiro.
We are definitely sending this to Sarah Shapiro.
Okay. So can you talk about, you said, like, that you faced, like, you had rejections. Like, can you talk about that? Like,
a ton. I had a lot of rejections. When I first started, I was just sending to, the from publications. And some things were accepted, some things were rejected. Mm-hmm. I had a really interesting experience with a certain website, which, after I tell the story, you can tell me if I'm allowed to say the name of it or not. But I was sending them piece after piece after piece, and they just kept rejecting it. And finally, I just had the nerve to say, can you just tell me why you keep rejecting my pieces? And he said to me, well, the problem is they're just not interesting. And then I said, okay, so I want to, and then I decided, I said, well, I could have just given up, but I said, no, I want to know why it's not interesting. I'm going to try to make this interesting. So I started really studying the pieces on the website until I got to a point where I saw what made it interesting and what the structure was of the different articles there.
Interesting.
And then I spent a long time doing that until I finally, and then from then on, everything that I wrote for them was accepted.
Wow.
Yeah, to the point that in the end he turned around and said, please write more for us, and I didn't at the time, necessarily have the time to do so. So sometimes it's a matter of getting what that specific niche is looking for.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Right.
But then in every market, I have rejections all the time. Now I've kind of got my groove in the from market, but so I always am, exploring elsewhere. And I have an agent now in the secular market, and I write things that are rejected. A lot of what's rejected in the secular market is because of the political climate of today, which is a whole, we can talk about this for an hour, so I don't know if you want to get off into that.
But say, like, in 2 minutes, like, what are you...
Well, there's this whole concept of own voices, which means that you're not allowed to write about anything that you don't experience yourself. So
Cultural appropriation, misappropriation, I guess you would call it.
So it's very, very difficult to get published today, and especially because they basically want me to write a story about my experience being an Orthodox Jew, and I'm having a rough time finding the right angle that will simultaneously be fascinating without, maligning my community in any way, which is not something that I want to do.
Right.
And I've had big agents who have contacted me over the years who have said, can you write one of those, like, A Stranger Among Us type of stories? And I'm like, no.
Unorthodox.
Yeah, exactly. One of those unorthodox. So that's not me, so that's also an issue. So it's complicated. And then if I write a story about any other topic, it's no longer considered to be appropriate to really do that.
For example, you tried to write about a child from another culture?
I wrote a story about adoption, and that was considered to be, it's called, like, they call it white savior mode, so the person who saves can't be white, so then if so, then the child also has to be white that you're saving, otherwise it's called the white savior, which is considered a no-no. But then there was a child with a disability in it, and unless you yourself or one of your children have that specific disability, that's also considered to be...
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't realized that. Wow. So... getting complicated.
Yeah, so it's hard sometimes to get rejections in that market. And I once even had a book, but sometimes it's just a matter of, riding the wave and seeing where the market is going to go, or sometimes it's also one person's opinion. I once wrote a story, a rhyming children's book, and I brought it to a conference that I went to, and I met with a top editor at this conference, and she looked at it and she said, just trash it. Don't even bother. It's really not good. And then I ended up taking a vet and putting it aside because she said that it was terrible. For like 5 years, I didn't even look at it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I paid for this meeting. Like, I paid a lot of money to meet with this top editor. It was like a special. And then a number of years later, I said, you know, I'm just curious. I showed it to my mother. My mother said this is good, which is the worst writing advice ever. Like, if your mother likes it, do something with it. That's like the worst writing advice. Everybody says, just because your mother likes it does not mean this is good, you know? And my mother was like, no, it's really good. What happens to have a mother who's really honest. So, and she tells me what stuff of mine she really enjoys and what stuff she doesn't. So I ended up sending that to Carbon Learner Publishers,
yeah.
And like within 24 hours, they were like, we love this, we want to publish it, and they ended up publishing it, and it was selected by PJ Library, and it was like a really life-altering career move for me.
Wow.
Something that...
Wait, what's it called? What's the name of the book?
It's called Izzy the Wiz and Passover McLean.
Wow.
It's about a boy inventor who invents a machine that can clean the whole house for Pesach, but then the machine malfunctions and starts doing everything backwards and spitting out the entire house upside down. So it's like this Seussian type of, you know, alternate universe. And it did really, really well. So that was something that I shelved because of one important person's legitimate opinion.
Yeah.
Which wasn't the consensus among everyone's opinions. So
right.
You never know. Sometimes it's worth it to keep trying. If you keep meeting rejection over and over again, then you have to figure out what's wrong, like I did with that website. But
Right. Something I found I found inspiring about reading about your story, like your journey as a writer, is just how you don't give up. Like you use the quote, "In devarim met b'fnei ratzon," like nothing can stand before your will.
No, it's true.
Because you keep on trying. Because I think many people will just give up. Like you get this rejection, another rejection, 10 rejections, 20 rejections. Yeah. Also looking for an agent, you said.
Oh my gosh.
And manuscripts.
I must have gotten 100 rejections.
From agents?
Yeah. And then I finally found one.
So what do you tell yourself? You got your 99th rejection from an agent. What do you tell yourself?
So if I send out a manuscript that is getting rejected over and over and over and over again, so I will say this manuscript obviously isn't the right one. It's time to move on, and I'll move on to the next one. I think I got my agent with like my maybe fourth manuscript, so I had like three before that I didn't do anything with them.
You just put them back in the drawer.
Yeah, the computer drawer. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and like the file.
Proverbial drawer. It depends how important the dream is to you. I think it really depends how important that thing is to you. If you feel like I'm just not going to feel satisfied if I don't reach this goal, then you're just going to keep pushing. If you feel like I'm content to not reach this goal right now, which there are times where I put goals on hold because I say right now I want to focus on my family, or right now I want to focus on a different aspect of my career or whatever it may be, so then that's a decision, and that's a perfectly legitimate decision. And there are people who do that. There are people who say, I have a goal to be X, but I'm going to put this on hold for 20 years while I raise my kids. You know, and that happens all the time. I have friends who have done that with very illustrious careers that they've literally put on hold for 20 years to raise their kids, and I think it's incredibly admirable. That wasn't the path that I took because I felt like I needed fulfillment in other areas of my life also outside of my parenting, which is interesting because I think you never know which type of parent you're going to be. Mm-hmm. I think some parents can find their entire life within their four walls of their home and their families, and it's really enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
you thought you'd be one of those?
I thought that I would be one of those because I'm obsessed with my kids. And I really am obsessed with them. Like, I can, like, literally stare at a baby for, like, 5 hours. And I try to talk to every one of my kids every single day. And I'm so enmeshed with them. You know, I'm very, very, very into my kids. Sometimes to my detriment. But but I would have thought, that I would be one of those people, but I wasn't. I have this creative side of me that when it's not expressed, it's like I languish. So that was an interesting discovery. And sometimes you'll find people who you would think are like these high power. I have, you know, someone on my block who's got a PhD in biochemistry, and she's been home for 20 years raising her kids, and she's so content and so happy. I said to her, "Do you ever feel like you're not utilizing your brain?" And she said, "Never."
Wow.
And that's really wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in your book about Sheva, so you dedicated to your muses.
The muses,
yeah. And so it's eight muses because it's Moshe and Hindi.
Right.
So that your
my
son got married.
My oldest son just got married. Yeah. Okay. New phase of life.
Wow.
Yeah. He's been married. They've been married a year and a half. So it's really exciting.
Wow. So what's your age range?
So my oldest is 23 and my youngest is 7.
Oh, so we're the same because my oldest is 23.
Oh.
And my youngest is 6.
That's so, yeah.
Right.
So same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like when you say they're your muses, like are they the muse for all of your writing or for that specific?
This specific one, Sheva is a real character. She is like, it's so funny.
Do you have a daughter named Sheva?
No.
Okay.
I don't. As a matter, even when I write about my kids, I change their names. But Sheva is a super popular character. I get letters about her like almost every day.
Let me just explain it. Sheva.
Oh, yeah.
So there's the magazine, the very popular from magazine Bina, and their children's magazine is Bina Bunch. And so Sheva is a character in Bina Bunch.
Yeah. Actually now they call the magazine Bounce to It, Spark to It every
sorry.
Other week.
Okay.
And no, it's still BB. It's still Bina Bunch also.
Okay.
It has a lot of names.
Okay.
So that so Sheva appears every week in that magazine in a column called Hey Diary. And it's basically a column with incredible drawings by Mindy Ehrlich, who is a fabulous artist and who totally understands my strange brain. So it's really amazing. I'm very, very grateful to her. She doesn't want to put her name on the column. So it's on the book, but for some reason she doesn't want her name in the column. So
I saw her in the acknowledgments.
Yes, yeah, it's in the acknowledgments. Yeah. So I feel very bad that she's not on the column, but it's not my directive, it's hers. So basically has these drawings of Sheva, and Sheva's this really super quirky character, and it's so interesting to me because I get letters all the time from kids, teenagers, and adults, a lot of adult fans.
Really?
As a matter of fact, just this Shabbos, I had a woman who came over to my house. She walked down like 100 steps. She said, it's my first time in Eretz Yisrael. She said she just knocked on my door on Shabbos afternoon.
Wow.
She said, it's my first time in Israel. And I just had to come to meet Sheva's creator because my kids said, I have to come meet you. She's like, and I have to know. I'm so happy that Sheva got a friend and they were analyzing it in school, all the kids, and they're so excited. And that time that the mother called the Sheva, and this is the letter that I get over and over again. She's
wow.
This interesting, quirky kid. So I get a letter from one mother that says, thank you so much for representing ADHD kids in literature. And I'm like, well, that's funny. I didn't know Sheva had ADHD. And then somebody else will write and say, like, oh, my gosh, I totally identify with Sheva because I'm, like, this super creative kid. And then another kid will write, and I identify with Sheva because I'm, like, a little bit on the autistic spectrum, and I, like, have trouble sometimes saying the right thing. And then another kid will write and say, thank you so much for it. And, like, it's so funny because everyone from neurotypical to, you know, neuroatypical kids are finding themselves in Sheva, and I think she's kind of like this character that finds the common denominator between every kid and the way that kids think and the way that kids behave. And
it's like Queen Esther that they said that every culture who saw them thought, oh, she's like they're Moroccan. Well, this is like, oh,
they're
she's like me.
Yeah.
She's my culture. She's she speaks my language.
That's
wow. Analogy anyway. Wow. I just want to say, so we're finishing in 5 minutes. So this is your chance to ask any question that you want to Yael Mermelstein, anything you want to know about Sheva and her life, whatever. Please be please in the chat. You're welcome to write your questions. So over the course of your mothering life, have you had different stages of have you now are you writing more than were there fluctuations in your commitment to writing?
Yeah, so until 15 years ago I wasn't really writing at all.
Hmm.
So that was like a pretty
this all started was, 15 years ago?
Yeah, pretty much 15 years ago.
Wow.
When my fifth child was born. And so that was fourth. I don't remember. I have to count them. Anyway, so yeah, and so that's first of all, and then sometimes I write more, sometimes I write less, but now it's my job, so it's also kind of like any job you have, it pays the bills, you know, so I do it now as a job. It's not just a creative outlet, it's more of a profession, so the same way, you know, I go to work, and I edit, and I write, and I have deadlines, so it's a very different type of thing now than it was when I first started.
Yeah, what's the balance for you in terms of, do you still feel that same kind of fulfillment? I'm writing something that you get paid
for? Sadly, no. Definitely not. Writing has kind of morphed from this incredible outlet for me into something that's more of being blessed to have a profession that I love doing.
It's a skill that I'm
blessed to have a profession that I really enjoy incredibly. I actually worked in a different profession beforehand. So I got my master's in secondary education, and I was teaching for 9 years, and I loved the kids, but I just wasn't happy doing it. I felt a tremendous amount of pressure preparing, and I never felt adequate, and whatever it was, I just never felt like it was me.
Right.
So I know the difference between being in a profession that you're, where you just love what you're doing, and where you're just pyrrhic about what you're doing.
And now you said that you started, I read that you started teaching again. You're teaching writing now?
I teach writing, and that I love doing, yeah.
Wow.
I sometimes give workshops. I don't give enough. I'm constantly getting requests, and I don't always give workshops because I just don't have the time, because now I'm working in the office for Bina and Hamadia, so I edit the children's newspaper there. So there's only so much I can do, and I work hard at maintaining, like, my work-family balance is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I said I kind of like my kids. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's so nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So I just want to answer a question I'm sure all of you are asking. I said that before the interview that we had three things in common. I only said two things.
Oh.
One is this, that we were inspired by Sarah Shapiro and had a life-altering conversation with her that sent us forth on our kind of writing career.
Yeah.
The second great haiku, which was our first, kind of published on the bulletin board. The third thing is that we both have, we both work at a desk in our bedroom.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
I work in my bed now.
Oh, in your bed?
A lot.
Oh, you have a laptop?
I have a laptop, and I'm so lazy that I sometimes just work in my bed.
No, I'm kind of going back and forth. I'm kind of like, during Corona, I was like sitting in my bed with a laptop, and I'm... Yeah, and I think also there might be a fourth thing. I think the website that you're talking about is itch.com.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had the same thank you, Rabbi Cooper Smith.
Yeah.
I also had the same thing. I had a few rejections from itch.com, and I asked him, like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And he said the things you write need to be personal and dramatic.
Something along those lines, and I was like, it wasn't interesting was my interpretation. I'm sure he said it in a nicer way.
Yeah, right. He said personal dramatic.
He's a very nice person.
Really, and so thank you, Rabbi Cooper Smith.
Yeah,
a lot of shout outs to
there are a lot
who
of
helped
shout-out.
Us. Yeah. Great. Okay. So we're gonna say goodbye.
We have one question.
Okay.
It's from Silana. She said, "You're one of my favorite authors.
How do you
keep your own voice, sense of humor, out of your characters' voices? How do you develop different personalities and stay so true to them?"
So it's actually hard sometimes in the beginning when I create a character. In the beginning, they all sound like me. Especially when I start a series, they very often will sound like me. And then it takes me a while until I get into their head. Like, I even feel like, let's say, for example, with my Sheva character, in the beginning, she was me. And then slowly, slowly, she started to develop her own identity. So a lot of times, I try not to plan the story in advance. And when I don't plan the story in advance, then I let the character take me where the character wants to go. And when the character is taking me where they want to go, that's when the character finds their own voice, finally. And sometimes I'll have to write a whole novel and then realize that I'll have two characters, for example, that sound exactly the same. If you have two characters that are speaking the same way, and if you would, like, ask them three questions, they would answer all of them the exact same way, then that's a problem. It means that one of your characters is not properly developed, and you need to go back, sometimes crash it, and start all over again.
Right.
Which I do a lot of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, thank you so much, Yael Mermelstein. This is so
pleasure.
Wonderful.
Thank you, and thank you for listening.
I'm so happy that we're at the stage in Israel, like, that Corona's kind of, COVID's kind of behind us, that we're actually even legally allowed to be doing this.
We are.
So that's amazing.
Gosh.
And I just want to say something, a really generous offer from Yael, from her publisher, is that for... So with this on my website, and everywhere I'm going to be posting this recording of this interview, later tonight, I'm going to be putting a link for a free sneak preview of this book Sheva, and I read it, and I have to say it's about Sheva. She's in fifth grade. She's a girl in the fifth grade. Like, I have a daughter who's in the fifth grade, so it's very close to home.
I didn't even know she was in fifth grade. That's hilarious.
She was in fifth grade.
That's fascinating.
I didn't even remember how old she was.
That's so funny.
She's so ageless in my head, and like she doesn't like live anywhere particular, and she doesn't.
Wow.
But thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. Plugging my book. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, the sneak preview is of a chapter of the book where the girl, she comes and she has to find a place to sit in the cafeteria. And she's looking all around, where am I going to sit, and like the stress of like, I don't have, if I sit, I can't sit next to the popular kids, and I literally, it's been many, many years since I was in fifth grade myself and was in that same situation, but literally, like, I felt like, I had a physical reaction to this scenario, like, I could so relate to that stress, so thank you very much, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
That was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.